right, welcome back. Our special NCAA tournament edition tonight of Who's Talking? Jim Hobgood alongside Terry Gates, who's in studio. We had a visit from Frank Maloney from down at the PNC Center during the first half hour. And Terry and I have a lot to discuss. But in the meantime, we've got Jamie from Richmond on the line with a call. Jamie, thanks for calling in. And what's your question?
Yeah, guys, thanks for having the extra show tonight. My question is pretty simple. How come Virginia's not getting the love from any of these pundits, and that many people have Michigan State going all the way? You know, given the fact that you have upsets happening like the Mercers and the Daytons and so forth. I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Terry, you start. I'll follow up on that one.
Well, I think the first thing is Tom Izzo. I think he's made himself available to the media for year after year after year, so he's their friends. You know, he comes on Mike and Mike's show. He's regular on this, regular on that. Another, it's the Big Ten. You know, he's had success. So then, and Michigan State seems to get to the Final Four quite a bit, so they expect that. And I guess if I was Michigan State, if I won the Big Ten Conference Championship, I think a 4 seed might be a little low. But, you know, if you're 2 or 3, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, Virginia, not necessarily going back to your era, but certainly in the last decade or so has not had a lot of success. So you don't have that tradition vis-a-vis Michigan State that does have a national championship banner. They've got a coach in Tom Izzo. He may not be in the Hall of Fame yet, but he will be in due course, I think, eventually. So I think that's part of it. And I think part of it, too, is Virginia, at least this year, has not had that superstar player. I think the fact that they've played so well together as a team, and they haven't had that guy that really attracted a lot of attention. Because even within the ACC, I know Jay Williams, the former Duke player, mentioned several times that he thought Virginia got less respect than any regular season ACC champion.
Oh, without a doubt.
Had seen in his history of watching ACC basketball. So
and certainly the schedule that, you know, having only played Duke once, Carolina once, and,
right.
You
there
know.
Were some doubters going into the ACC tournament, which I think Virginia helped to eliminate any doubt in that regard with their 3 victories down in Greensboro. But Jamie, you still with us? Now he dropped off. Okay, so hopefully we addressed his question to some degree. But I think there's some advantages to not getting that respect. I think that gives gives you kind of an edge and maybe a little chip on the shoulder.
But, you know, I said Tom Izzo, but there's another T word out there. It's called Tennessee. And if you ever want to have a nightmare in a bottle, just go back to, was it December 28th, December 30th, whatever that date was. And
well, it was a Monday night, because I know Frank and I did the show, and I was going home to turn on the TV and watch the game. And in the 20 minutes it took me to drive home, the game was pretty much over by the time I got home. So that was a tough night. And I think we had the conversation with Dave Kane at Greensboro. I still think the biggest game of the year was the Florida State game on the road following that Tennessee debacle, where Virginia goes down to Tallahassee. And that's a place where the Cavs haven't had a whole lot of success in the last decade or so. I don't think they had won down in Tallahassee since Roger Mason was on the team. So
they had been close down there. They didn't finish, but they finished, which is really important for that team.
Yeah, and they get the big road win, and from then it was off to the races. So it's been a fun year. But I know I wanted to talk a little bit about your experience back in 1980. Virginia wins the NIT championship, which I think you had to win 5 games to win the NIT.
5 wins, 32 teams.
And then in the NCAA tournament the following year, you played 5 games, losing in the semifinals to North Carolina. So, I mean, in those 2 years, you played 10 playoff games, so to speak. There's probably very few players that have had 10 games.
I think I started 15 games in those 2 years, but I started all 10 of those. So, that was, you know, a very special time. And especially when you're in the NIT, you're guarding Kevin McHale.
Yeah.
You know, who might he be? And, you know, so it was, you know, there was 48 teams in the tournament in 1981. This is the NCAA tournament. So if you weren't in the top 25, if you weren't in the top 29, 30 in RPI, you weren't getting in. And then we went down to the old Charlotte Coliseum, if I got my memory right, and then played Villanova, who had won the Thursday before. So they've been in the building. They've had success. we had lost a couple games down the stretch in Maryland in the ACC tournament. I think we lost at Wake Forest. Ralph was sick, I believe. And Notre Dame, of course, beat us in mid to late February. So it's hard playing a team like Big East team, Villanova, had a big center. And we're not playing so well. And they've already played once in that building and won. And they've doubled down on the tickets. So to get that win and to move on, just to survive and move on to Atlanta.
Your team dealt with high expectations.
Yeah.
You know, because of Ralph.
And, exactly.
Of course, that was a big thing. But, you know, Jeff Lamp and Lee Raker and yourself and others were not too shabby. I mean, they were really some talented guys on that Virginia team.
Well, and we had been ranked number one in the country for about 5 or 6 weeks. We were undefeated. And then I think the moral of the story is you don't play Notre Dame on a Sunday in Chicago.
Yeah. I think we got another caller on the line. It's Greg. Greg, we appreciate your call. Your question or comment for Terry Gates and yours truly.
Well, first of all, it's great to hear Terry on the radio. So
Thank you.
To have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think Terry and I, we've got 22 years of analyst experience between us here, so we ought to at least, if we can't come give you the right answer, we'll at least give you an answer.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we can ask. Yeah, I think this whole thing about the Cavaliers being not respected is because we're in this Sports Center highlight mentality now. And this, one of the things that I love about this team is that they truly work as a team. And Terry, you can certainly appreciate this because, I mean, you did a yeoman's job, doing whatever you could to make the team work.
And whatever I could to get in the game.
You know, so. Well, I think that's a very good point, and you know, I think this team, there's no question, a number of guys on this team have sacrificed maybe some of their individual accolades. Joe Harris obviously comes to mind for the betterment of the team, as well as Justin Anderson. I think Justin Anderson and Anthony Gill have accepted their roles coming off the bench. As that's the coach's decision as to who's going to start, and they know they're going to contribute when they get in the game, and they seem to be very content with that.
I think they accepted that. I think Tevin Jones and Evan Nolte has accepted their limited playing time for the good of the team, and winning cures a lot of ills, and they've done that. And like I said, as I mentioned earlier, the passing between Brogdon and Harris in the ACC tournament was unbelievable. You know, you just don't get that. You just don't show up and do that. I mean, you have to know what you have to. You have to expect your teammate to be there. You have to rely on him to be there, and you have to make that pass if he's going to be there. And it's a two-way street. I mean, every great passer is a great catch. And those two guys. And as I said earlier, which coach in the ACC, they were asking who was the most valuable player on Virginia's team. And Brogdon kind of got that accolade, but one coach, I think it was a Boston College coach, said, you know, if you had a player who averaged 17, 18 points last year as a junior, he's preseason player of the year, and he drops down to 11, and they're winning, and he allows that to happen without becoming a total distraction. That doesn't happen in modern-day teams. That would be a mutiny on your hands if that happened on most teams. And the fact that Joe Harris and Brogdon and Perantes, they all stepped up and figured out. And that's the reason they're playing so well right now. And they are hard to watch from time to time. It's the first one to 56, I say, or first one to 60. So.
Well, that has gotten better, I must admit.
It has.
In November and December, it was painful at times. I think back to the Wisconsin game. You know, I was thinking Dr. Naismith was turning in his grave after that game. But, you know, the nice thing, I think, is that as the year has developed, the team does now, when they have an opportunity to push the basketball and get into the front court, as we talked about the big three-point play by Joe Harris against Duke on Sunday, but they certainly have had a number of opportunities where if they can push the ball and get an easy basket in transition, they will take advantage of that now that they really didn't do that before.
Yeah, and that's where Justin Anderson comes in. And you know, this is the first year in this pack line defense, maybe a little late last year, that they've offensive rebounded. They never even tried to get an offense. They just turned around and ran back and played defense. And now they're attacking the offensive glass as hard as a defensive glass. And we've left one guy out in that transformation of what happened is Akil Mitchell. Yeah. His scoring average down about 4 points a game. And something happened where he almost like gave up trying to score, but he just went out, and he's almost a Dennis Rodman on the offense, and the defensive glass. He plays defense, and he smiles. He and Justin Anderson look like they're having the time of their life, and they are.
Well, you know, the pieces really fit on this team, and maybe the most valuable player is Ethan Saliba, the trainer, because the one thing Virginia's had this year is no significant injuries.
Right, right.
And, you know, you've got a chemistry on this team that, because all the parts seem to be equal, if a part was taken away, I think that might damage the chemistry of the team and the way they're playing.
And late, you know, the offense has gotten better, and it's, you know, London Perrante's taking those wide open threes where he was taking one or two a game early on and wasn't hitting them. But when he's come out in the stretch in late February, he came out, beginning of second half, he's wide open, he shoots, he scores, and now all of a sudden the defense has to guard him.
Well, it's one more guy on the perimeter.
Right. It opens things up.
And Anthony Gill, I've said this several times. My buddy Barry Parkhill has been telling me for a couple of years that Anthony Gill is really a gifted offensive player. Of course, he saw him last year in practice when Gill couldn't play, and saw him preseason this year. And I didn't necessarily see it at first, but now you can see what Barry was talking about. Is at 15 feet and in,
yep,
this guy's got some special moves close to the basket and has
right,
improved his free throw shooting, made some big ones, certainly made two big ones in that Pitt game to give us the three-point lead late.
So, you know, it's everyone playing well, and I think one of the goals of that whole team is to make sure that Mike Toby gets involved. They have to have him. Don't have to play 18, 20 minutes a game, but when he's in there and, you know, he has good hands, so he will catch the ball. If you're not flinging at him from 3 feet away, he will catch the ball. But he gives them a decided advantage when he's involved and he's smiling. And, you know, he's had some rough games where he threw foul trouble or just things not going his way. He sits down at the end of the bench, and when do you bring him back in? But, I mean, they're a much better team starting him both halves and see what happens with his game. And we will appreciate the minutes he's getting out 2 years from now.
Yeah, he's the one natural five
right
that they have. And I think as he gets stronger, he's just going to get better. And this year's experience is going to make him even better. So you look ahead to next year. You still got Mike Toby. You still got Darian Atkins. You still got Anthony Gill.
Yep.
So, but we're not looking ahead to next year. We're looking ahead to 9:30 tonight against the Chanticleers. But anyway, Greg, we appreciate your question.
I think he hung up, and I was looking for one more compliment. I was going to make my day.
I know. We may, you know, Frank always talks about getting rid of Hobo. I think maybe Frank, just kidding. But anyway, Terry Gates and Jim Hobgood in studio here, special edition of Who's Talking. Again,
you could change the lock, though. You could change the lock of the Pasco.
Tell him the show's on Tuesday night starting next week. But 345-0910 if you want to join us by phone with a question or comment. Terry, as you kind of look at the game tonight, we've talked a lot about it. What is your expectation as to how this will unfold tonight? I mean, is this going to be a game where Virginia kind of takes control and just gradually builds a lead, or what do you expect?
You know, I think at the 16-minute mark, they're up 6-4. They're filling each other out. But I think at some point in time that their defense will probably – I just don't think that Coastal Carolina has seen that type of defense. And then they'll pick their threes. And I fully expect it could be a 12-point game at halftime. And I would be shocked if Tevin Jones is not finishing this game in the last 4 minutes. I just think Virginia's in a good state of mind. They know as well as anyone in this tournament that if they don't go out and shoot, play hard and play defense, they're going home. That they got to do. They have to do that from day one. And I think because they've been in that building, that's a huge advantage. You should know more than anyone. If you've been in that building two or three times, it's not something foreign. You've seen it. You've been successful down there. It just gives them, even though Coastal Carolina's not going very far, it's an easy commute for the Cavaliers to go down to Raleigh.
It's an easy trip, and I think, you know, where you've been in a building and you've had success shooting the ball, you're familiar with the sight lines, you know, for the guys that take the perimeter shots. That certainly can be a factor as the Cavs get ready to to play the game tonight. Interesting, you know, Harvard, Tommy Amaker. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see his name. I didn't necessarily think Virginia Tech. I guess they've already made their hire. But you look at Boston College with an opening, even Wake Forest, be an awfully easy move for Tommy Amaker to move over to BC.
Yeah, you know, but I'd have to think, you know, I don't know his financial situation, but I assume he's doing okay. I assume, you know, the Harvard's paying him well. He's a very well-spoken, very articulate young, not a young man anymore, but man. And, you know, it's a nice job probably coaching Harvard basketball. And your next move, he's already been to Michigan, right?
Right.
So that didn't work out so well. So he's only going to have one more chance to get, and that's why when you coach at Dayton, you coach, you know, places like, you know, George Mason, places like that, they're great job because your next one can't be three years and done. Look at Anthony Grant in Alabama.
I think you're in a nice way you're saying the ACC can be a very unforgiving place.
And with 15 teams?
Yeah. Oh. Listen, we're going to go to our last break right now. We'll come back with some final thoughts, look ahead to the game tonight. And the show on Monday night. Stay tuned. Who's Talking? We'll be back after these.